think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 177 of Low Limit Football on this 25th of September, 2017. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and here to remind you that when we last aired last week, we had five perfect teams in the top five leagues. Two teams were blemished over the week. We'll let you know who they were and try to predict which team will be the last perfect team standing in league. UEFA Champions League and Europa League returns for match day two this week. We're going to take a look at all the top matchups coming up. In MLS, a player was held out of his European audition. We'll discuss what that means and who that was. And we're going to dive deep into the Serie A tonight with our special guest, Matt Santangelo from Italian Football Daily and Football Italia will be joining us in just a few minutes. Let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Rojas. Rob, what's going on, man? How was your week?
Oh, it was good. It was good. How was yours? I mean, I think we could both speak from each other that we saw a bunch of drama on both versions of football this weekend, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, it's driving me crazy. For those of you that listen overseas, obviously the National Football League here in the United States, the NFL is second to no one. Yeah, I mean, it's. You know, everyone else says that Jesus Christ has to share his day with the NFL. So it's a big deal here in the United States. And obviously, President Trump made some remarks about you know, football players and the NFL, and the NFL backlashed in a huge show of unity over the weekend. So that's been kind of carrying on. I got to tell you, Rob, just for our 2 seconds of political, because I hate getting into that stuff, especially on this show. I feel like every time there's no news, that this president creates news. So we had Harvey, Hurricane Harvey. We had Hurricane Irma. We had Hurricane Maria. All totally front and center on every news broadcast. And it was a wonderful deflection. Even when he called Kim Jong-un a rocket man. You know, we don't need that.
I feel bad for Elton John.
Yeah, right. So far, now that Maria's gone and that Irma's gone and that Jose is gone, that you and I got a little bit of wind from, and Harvey's gone, we have nothing to deflect from whatever it is. So the man creates a deflection, and of all the stupid things, we're gonna pick on sports, because you got to remember, not only did he say the stuff about the NFL, but he did the NBA with the Golden State Warriors. He removed or withdrew the invitation to the White House, which. As far as I've been following sports in this country, I cannot remember a president uninviting a championship sports team to the White House.
And that's been going on for decades, hasn't it?
As far as I can remember. I'm 45 years old. I don't remember a sports team not being invited to the White House. So it is what it is, and that's our 2 cents. And I got to tell you, Rob, there was a decent-sized chunk of me watching all this stupid drama about this, the tweets and the everything on the weekend, that I was so glad that I follow soccer first and foremost, because there was none of that this weekend. Not even in MLS. I mean, as much as everybody wanted to try and create that drama, there was none of that. So I'm good. You know, I'm good. And that's my 2 second soapbox on that hand egg. Some of the football diehards will call it hand egg, but that football, American football drama. But we did have, we've got opening thoughts. We're going to talk about a little bit of the drama that's continuing, that we're going to talk about in a few minutes. But, you know, before we do that, and I want to get through it quickly because I know our guest is ready to join us and I'm really excited to talk to him. I want to get the trivia out of the way. So, and I told you that I had developed two trivia questions, and you were like, hey, let's do both of them. So I'm going to give you both trivia questions, and then you can answer them at the end of the show. How's that?
Sounds good.
All right. So the first one, which is the one that I made up first, is basically a statement. Although I am not a striker, I have scored goals for Lille, Newcastle, PSG, and Crystal Palace. I've even scored for my national team. Who am I? Okay.
Okay.
And my second trivia question, and this is a good one because this person is going to come up when we talk to Matt in a few minutes. Paulo Dybala right now has the highest ratio of minute per goal in the top five leagues in Europe. He's scoring a goal every 47 minutes, and 10 goals total so far in the season. So he is leading the way in the top five category of minutes per goal. Can you name the other four players that are in there? Okay. So he's number one. Who are the other four that make up the top five of minute per goal in the top five leagues in Europe as of today? All right?
All right.
There you go. So let's hit the opening thoughts topic. And like you and I had talked pre-show, it's a continuation of our most recent drama. And that is the Edison Cavani, Neymar, PSG penalty free kick gate that we've got going on. I don't even know if I can come up with a name for it. But we had a new twist over the weekend. A twist since then, which Jonathan Johnson, among others, has reported that PSG is denying it. But apparently, Edson Cavani was offered €1 million to hand over the penalty taking duties to Neymar for the season. It's unheard of, you know. It's insane. The article I found on AS suggested that Nasser El Khelaifi, who is the owner of PSG, is the one that made the €1 million offer to Cavani to hand over the penalty taking duties to Neymar. This stinks of a couple things to me, Rob. First of all, I've really got a feeling that there's potential either that Neymar went to the top brass and said, I want to take the penalties. You pay me, you know, 30, 40 million euro per year. I'm the top paid player in Europe. I want the money. I want the penalties. I need the penalties. So I think that there's potential that discussion was had somewhere over the past week. You know, Neymar did not play on the weekend. He's nursing an injury right now, and I think that he probably had the time to do that. And I also think that if it did happen, if I'm Edson Cavani, I turn down the million also, Rob. So I'll tell you why about that in a minute. But I'd like your thoughts on the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a continuation of the drama that we didn't really expect it to happen. You know, and we all thought that this would be everything settled about a day or two after we spoke about it last week. And then all of a sudden, El País is getting this report about PSG offering Edison Cavani $1 million to take to give his penalty duties to Neymar. First of all, and this is just a few things, and I could be totally off track of this, and Joe, you can correct me if you want to. Do you think that this is just a bribe happening?
Yeah, to an extent.
Is PSG bribing Cavani?
Yeah,
with $1 million.
Yeah, I think they are. I think, for lack of a better term, yes, I think that is an accurate description of what's happened here. You know, because it's not salary, it's not bonus. You know, it doesn't fall under those categories. So what is it? You're paying somebody to do something. Now they already pay him to play. So I would agree with that assessment that this is a bribe to say, you know, hey, we're going to keep this on the down low. We're not going to talk about it. We're not going to go into the media about this. But here's €1 million. The next time a penalty comes up, just you take the ball and you hand it to Neymar and say, here, pat him on the back, buddy. It's all yours. Go get him. You know, I think that's a good description. You know,
right.
So
no. Go ahead.
Yeah, for me, for Cavani, I think if that did happen, I think he is smart to turn this down. Because when it comes time, I mean, let's be honest here. At this point, the way this has gone over the next 2 weeks, do you see Cavani lasting longer than his contract at PSG?
When's his contract up to again?
I don't know. I didn't look that part up yet, but I can't
imagine. Let me check.
All right. So my opinion is, he's out as soon as that contract is up, or even sooner. He's out, and he'll go somewhere else. He'll probably go to England, okay? Because English teams love throwing money around. All right, and this is a guy that's a proven striker, scoring 30 plus goals. All right, he's done it in Italy. He's done it in France. He's scored on the biggest stages. He's scored at World Cup qualifying. He's scored in Champions League. He's scored everywhere. This guy can put the ball in the back of the net.
2020.
So we're just a couple of years off.
3 years.
But he's a clinical finisher, right? There's no arguing that point. So someone is going to throw a lot of money at this guy. Okay. Now, when they go to throw money at this guy and they're sitting at the negotiating table and they're going to negotiate his wages and that sort of thing, does Cavani sit there and say, well, you know, I had a drop off and I only scored 23 goals because I didn't get to take 7 penalty kicks, right? So I didn't get to take 7 penalties for PSG. Or does he sit there and go, yeah, I scored 30 goals last year. Do you see what I mean? It makes his negotiating power for the next contract that much stronger, in my opinion. And when they take the opportunity to take penalties away from him, they also take the opportunity to make money. And that could be the difference between 1, 2, 3 million per year. Okay? So I for me, I think it's smart of him. I think... I think it allows him to possibly earn more money in his next contract somewhere else, which I think right now, the way this has gone down, is a foregone conclusion, because they're not going to get rid of Neymar. Okay.
No.
Neymar's at PSG for the duration of his career at the moment. I don't see him moving unless somebody comes in with ridiculous money, Rob. And how many teams can come in with that kind of ridiculous money? There's like 2.
Not a lot.
And one he already played with. So I don't see it happening. So it's going to be Cavani to go. And I think that him taking the million and giving up the penalties would actually cost him money down the road. So, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I think is also going against his dignity and what he is, what he can prove as a player. I mean, we've already seen it last season where he scored, I believe, 30 goals, 40 goals last season for PSG. You know, he's not exactly someone who has gone off a drop-off. I mean, this is a guy who is scoring literally 20, 30 goals a season for PSG. And so whoever does get him is going to get a great striker. I think now it's especially now with the transfer of Kylian Mbappe possibly going to happen. I mean, you're gonna already have your replacement there, so it's not like PSG are sweating over him leaving the club.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. And that's something I had said to you this morning, was they already have his replacement. His replacement is an 18-year-old that is scoring goals in Ligue 1 and has proved he can score goals in Ligue 1. So they've already replaced him. That's a done deal. And if they get rid of Cavani or they send him somewhere even before his contract is up, they're going to reap that money, okay? And they're going to be able to buy another one if they wanted to. They'll buy another striker, so it's no big deal. You know, they're actually in a decent situation, you know, for what's going on.
All right.
So, I mean, any final thoughts you wanted to add before we go? I mean, if you want to speculate where he could possibly go if he does move on?
Oh, I mean, how many teams need a striker nowadays?
They all do.
No, of course. I mean, maybe Real Madrid. I mean, that's someone who I don't think they're going to stay with Benzema all the time for the next few years. So why not go for Cavani?
That's a good spot. How about an English club? I would say that there you might be a couple English clubs that might be interested in his services.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. But you know, I think most English clubs already have their strikers, Lacazette at Arsenal, Gabriel Jesus, Aguero at City, Morata at Chelsea, Lukaku and Zlatan at Manchester United, Harry Kane at Spurs. So yeah, there's not a lot out there that would like try to bench these players or make them go in order for Cavani to go in. So it's sure. really hard.
Sure. You think someone like an Arsenal? I mean, they've got Giroud still. Lacazette scored 2 goals today. Could they possibly look at him as a, as something they could add in?
Oh, I don't see why not. I think any club in the world, or especially Arsenal, would love to get a striker. Why don't you take him? I don't think that would happen, considering what you already got with Dybala and Higuain, but hey, why not?
Sure, absolutely. So I just want to end our opening thoughts conversation. I'm sure at the way this is going, Rob, next week we will probably have more Neymar Cavani drama to discuss, especially with their big matchup in the Champions League coming up this week. So joining us now sure. on Low Limit Football from Italian Football Daily is Matt Santangelo. Matt, how are you tonight?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Obviously, Skype never seems to, throw that monkey wrench in our system, so I'm glad we got you connected here. I want to jump into the questions really quick. Thanks for joining us, and I'm really excited as somebody who watches a lot of Serie A, probably too much. I want to jump in quickly, but my question is actually not necessarily Serie A, it is more Ligue 1, because I want to ask you about Mario Balotelli. With his career and kind of his head seemingly screwed on straight now, is it time for him to get a second look with the Italian national team? And especially when you think about the only striker really performing at the top level right now for the national team is Ciro Immobile. Belotti's been playing well, but I think after Ciro Immobile and Belotti, I think we have a drop-off. So is it time maybe for Balotelli to get a look again?
Me personally, if I've always been a Mario Balotelli apologist ever since he came into the mix in Serie A with Inter years ago, and then that moved to Manchester City, and then he actually came to Milan, I believe in the winter Mercato in 2013. I've always been a fan of him. I think everything he has accomplished, though with some question marks mixed in and some issues on the field, he's produced, and I think yes, he's had a little bit of a bumpy course over the past couple of years, but what he's doing at Nice, I think it's very interesting, and I definitely should be looked at from Gianpiero Ventura, the coach of the Azzurri. He should be looked at a little bit closely, I think, just because, again, as you just mentioned, Ciro Immobile and Belotti are, I believe, the 1-2. They're the strike pair that Italy will be using, hopefully if they qualify for the World Cup. But that's the pair they've been using throughout World Cup qualification. And then after those two, you really only have Eder of Inter, who's he has his games. He's not a bad player. He can kind of make his impact when he is called upon. And Manolo Gagliardini, who used to be at Napoli, but he moved last winter to Southampton. So I definitely do think there is room for Mario Balotelli to break into this squad. But I think it's kind of quite clear that I don't think Ventura is going to even go that way. I don't know why. To me, I think it'd be definitely worth looking into. It's not like he can use that same argument that he used against let's say Giovinco, where Giovinco's playing in an MLS and let's face it, a more inferior league to the likes of the top five in Europe. So for me, I think he definitely warrants a look from Ventura, but to me, unfortunately, I just don't see it happening.
Okay. Yeah, and that's a great point. There are a lot of people that are soured on Ventura at the moment, thinking that the tactics he used against Spain in that qualifier just were totally wrong, and because of it, they got destroyed in the midfield.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so speaking of well, I'm going to actually flip to the other side of the ball, and I'm going to look at the defense now, and I want to look at Leo Bonucci real quick.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite players when he was at Juventus, as a Juventino, I made the colossal mistake of getting a Bonucci jersey, and then, of course, 6 months later, he goes on to AC Milan. So my question to you is, Bonucci's start at AC Milan has been really lackluster, especially compared to what people are used to seeing out of him at Juventus. And especially even on this weekend where he was kind of victimized on both goals, especially the Zapata header, the first goal for Sampdoria this weekend. He just totally lost track of him, and Zapata had a clean header at his expense. So what's going on with Leo Bonucci? I mean, I have my thoughts, but I'd like to hear yours first.
Well, I think it's interesting with Bonucci. Obviously, everyone knows that, you know, he moved over for €42 million from Juventus this past summer in a deal that pretty much came out of nowhere. I think for me, obviously, he hasn't got off to the right start that most Milan fans would have hoped for. And I think that's obviously very clear. But I think it's something that's also more tactical, and it's coming more. It's the reason for his lack of integrating quickly with Milan is the fact, for one, he is dealing with a little bit of a way different system in the back. Remember, obviously, he doesn't have Chiellini, Barzagli, and even the likes of Sandro and even Lichtsteiner. So it definitely is going to take some time for him to get settled in. But on the other hand, he's had quite some time over the course of the preseason, the summer months, to get acclimated, learn how to play with his teammates, build a little bit of chemistry at least. So for me, I think it's what we're going to see with Bonucci over the next couple weeks. I think it's going to be very interesting. I think we have an idea that more or less Montella should be playing with three in the back. There were some issues with when they were playing a four in the back formation, and I think it was very clear that over his time at Juventus, he is much more comfortable with a three-man defense. So I think for me, I think it's going to take a little bit more time for Bonucci to settle into his role at Milan as the captain now. But I wouldn't jump off the cliff just yet if you're a Milan fan. He's a very good defender. He knows how to play in Italy. Obviously, he has all leadership qualities and everything like that. But I do think that, obviously, like him and everyone else on this team, there is going to be a microscope casted over them, because let's face it, it's a new ownership. There's this big ambition to get back into the Champions League. There's all this money spent, so he's going to have to start producing, and he's going to have to make do on that €42 million budget. Otherwise, it could be a miserable year for Milan, because let's face it, they're banking a lot on what they spent in the summer, and if they don't qualify, I think Fassoni's kind of made it clear that it could be a very difficult summer next year should they finish out of the top four.
Absolutely. I think for me, one of the biggest things that Bonucci's missing right now in his game is actually Giorgio Chiellini. And if you think about it, I don't know of a pair of defensive center backs in the world that have as many games together as Bonucci and Chiellini. And obviously it was a benefit of them being on Juventus as well as being on the national team together. And I think he misses that partnership that you build having played with somebody for so long.
Oh, no, 100%. I mean, I think that's the thing. I think a lot of people already, there were jokes made, after that Lazio game when that one play, if you recall, that Ciro Immobile pretty much spun him around and he scored a nice goal. I think it was maybe his third that game. So, again, I think I understand where a lot of the banter, if you will, is coming from with this Bonucci thing, because he left Juve and there's that rivalry too. When you leave a rival team, then that's, again, you're going to be looked at very closely. But I'm not too worried. I think again, it's mostly for the fact that Montella is still trying to it's funny. I don't really know what to say, because the last game that Montella, with the formation he played, he should have went Musacchio over Zapata. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at the couple of the goals that Sampdoria scored, Zapata made a couple of very just Zapata-like errors in the back. He slipped on one. He lost his marker on the other. It's just, for me, I think it's more of a tactical and a formational situation that has to be ironed out to really bring the best out of that entire back line. Because when they got Romagnoli, Bonucci and Musacchio, I think that's one of the very strongest back lines in Europe, and I think it could be one of the top obviously in Serie A with Juve. So I think it's going to take some time, but with these next couple games we got one against Roma and then the one against Inter, that's going to be the big thing to look at with Bonucci and his progression into this team.
Matt, I'm just going to jump in and go back to your conversation about the Italian striker. Obviously, it's going to be a big battle to see who will start at striker for the Italian national team, either in the next World Cup qualifiers or even in the World Cup when they do qualify, mm-hmm. if so. Obviously, it's a battle between players such as Andrea Belotti, Eder, Gabbiadini, even Mario Balotelli, as Joe mentioned. But there's one player who's already been impressing so far this season, and that's Shuri Immobile of Lazio. Do you think you're convinced enough that he should, yes, indeed start for the Italian national team with his form at Lazio, or do you still lean towards other players such as maybe Belotti or even Balotelli?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Ventura is going to play with two strikers. And like I was saying before, the preferred two strikers that he has been playing with and going to have been Belotti and Immobile. And they've seemed to have a good understanding of playing off one another. If let's face, I mean, if Immobile scores at this rate, he's a no-brainer, a starter for the Azzurri. And I think obviously you can't undermine or dismiss what Belotti can accomplish. I think, you know, we saw that last year. There was times where, I mean, he was the hottest striker in Italy and one of the hottest strikers in Europe. So I think for me that, you know, the Serie A, and that's a testament to, I think, what, you know, what Serie A brings. It's bringing a lot of goals, and it's bringing a lot of goals up front from the striker position. And I think for me is, I mean, Ciro Immobile, I think he has 8 goals right now. And I think he's obviously getting his recognition and his attention. But I think if it wasn't for that number 10 for Juve, I don't know if you guys heard of him, I think he would be getting a lot more praise than he really has. But again, Immobile's on some sort of form here. And I think he's going to be the guy, the key factor for Lazio if they want to possibly spoil the party for Milan and Inter and finish in the top 4.
Do you think it's too early to say that that Immobile is one of the best informed strikers in the world right now, or is it still early days?
I think for me right now, he definitely is one of the, you know, top strikers that it's in form. But I think you got to keep this in mind. He scored 3 against Milan. His goals will tend to come in bunches, and I think I really need to see this over a prolonged period of time. But having said that, we saw it last year. In his first year, in his return to Serie A, or rather, his first full season back from you know, those rough spells in the Bundesliga and in La Liga with Dortmund and Sevilla, that, you know, he went. This is where he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be in Italy because this is where he's comfortable and he knows how to play and he knows how to score goals here. So for me, I think he's definitely one of the top strikers in the world right now in terms of form. Again, I don't want people to come at me and say, oh, you think he's better than Lewandowski or Higuain, Benzema. I'm not saying that, but in terms of form and in terms of the confidence, and that's obviously a big thing for a striker, he's right there with the best right now.
Definitely. And his goals over the weekend, and especially consistently, has proven that.
Absolutely.
Just looking at another team that's been impressive so far, and that's that's Napoli. They've only... They won all 6 straight. They have the same points as Juventus with 18 points. Do you feel that this? It's obviously a very interesting side and very talented, and like, just it amazes me when I watch them play. It's just wow. That's all I can say. Do you think that this Napoli side really have enough to really fight for Juventus for this Scudetto, or do you still think that, you know, it's Juventus' league to lose?
That's a tough one. I think I will say this. I do feel like, and many Calcio fans would agree with me on this, that out of the past 6-7 years, this is really the closest we've seen to, I think this is the closest we're going to see to any team knocking Juve off their perch at the top of the league. I think we saw the past couple of years with Napoli, and there was a couple games where if they didn't slip up last year, Napoli would have been right there. And we actually saw towards the end of the year, Roma weren't far off either. So you can clearly see it. The gap is getting closer between the three, you know, call it 3 teams, Juventus, Roma, and Napoli. But I will say, I think it's Juventus and Napoli as the favorites to compete for the Scudetto. But again, what Napoli are doing on the field, I mean, it's remarkable. I think everyone's obviously fell in love with Sarri football and the way it's very pleasing on the eyes. It's very aesthetically pleasing, and it looks very attractive just for even the outsider, someone who maybe is just turning on a Champions League game and sees Napoli playing. They look at it and like, who are these? What is this team? Who's this coach? I mean, it's really remarkable to see how fluent this team passes the ball around and really works and, you know, builds up from the back. And eventually, I mean, it could take them 9 passes and then they'll have a goal. So I think for me to watch Napoli as, I mean, this is coming from a Milan fan. They look very attractive when they do play. But I will say this, though. We saw it, I believe, last week or the week before in the Champions League against Shakhtar, where they, obviously, Ukraine Bayern's a little bit of a difficult place for most people to play. I mean, most teams to play, rather. And we saw that Shakhtar, they went after Napoli. They brought the pressure to Napoli. They brought the game to Napoli. And I think there is that little bit of slight concern that when their football isn't ticking and their method of passing and movement and all those different things aren't working to the, you know, to according to plan, they can be beaten, and they were beaten 2-1 by Shakhtar. So, and let's face it, in my opinion, a more inferior side when you really look at, you know, the talent that Napoli has on their team. But I think it's all I can say is I'm really looking forward to the first Napoli Juve game, which I'm not exactly sure when it is, but the Serie A is going to be a special this year. So if anyone is an outsider and they haven't really given Serie A a chance over the past few years, this is the year to do it, because it's going to be very exciting.
And we hopeful, and obviously not going against Joe's loyalty or anything, but honestly, we do hope that that as neutrals or fans or anyone that isn't UA, that we see a really good race in Serie A.
December 1st, gentlemen. That is, that according to the schedule, round 15, Napoli Juventus, December 1st.
Mm. San Paolo or Inter?
San Paolo in Napoli.
That's an early Christmas gift. Yeah, that's an early one. I think that's gonna be some match. I really, even as a Milan fan, I really can't wait to watch that match. I think that's gonna be a good indication of where these teams stack up against each other. Because yes, Juve lost Bonucci. Yes, they lost Alves, but they're looked so far so good for them. They're looking like they're recovering quite well, and they look like that strong Juventus side that we've seen the past 6 years. It looks like they haven't skipped a beat, regardless of losing two stars in the back. So I think for me, that's going to be one of the first big tests for them. And for us as Calcio fans to really get a good indication of, you know, can Napoli really, you know, knock them off their perch and really, you know, end their 6 year reign as champions.
Definitely. And just my last question. Thank you again for coming on, Matt. Obviously, it's still early days, but we have World Cup qualifiers coming up next week and the following week. And I want to talk about Poland. Poland are currently in first in their group for the World Cup with 19 points. With Montenegro and Denmark behind in second and third place with 16. They got two good matches against Armenia and against Montenegro and Warsaw to finish up qualification. Number one, do you see them maintaining their state as the group winners and maybe even being the top seed for the World Cup? Or do you feel that there's probably going to be some sort of knockoff and they'll probably settle for a playoff spot?
I think they're going to finish atop their group. I think obviously over the last international break, they had that difficult match against Denmark where they just looked very flat, very shaky. And I think there was, you know, really was very few, promising performances out of that match from Poland. But they recovered. They handled Kazakhstan. And I think the one thing I am very concerned about is the fact that Milik is going to be out. Obviously, he's the striker for Napoli. And he's, unfortunately, I feel so bad for the guy because he just came back from an ACL injury.
Yeah.
And now he's on the shelf again with another ACL tear in the other knee. So I think that's, for me, that's very concerning just because, again, Poland they have quality. Obviously, they're a very good team. They're much more improved over the past 4 or 5 years. But I think for me is that obviously, you know, how these tournaments get. You really do need that depth. You need those guys off the bench when things aren't working to maybe give you a different look up front. And Milik was one of those guys who, you know, he can play in behind. He plays a second striker. He could play as a lone striker. And I think, you know, having him injured for some of these crucial World Cup qualifying games could hurt Poland. But I think let's face it, they're going to rely on Lewandowski, the guy who's got him this far. They did that during the Euro qualification last year, where they pretty much rode Lewandowski as one of the top scorers in European qualification. So I think that's going to be the same recipe to get them to finish top the group. But I'm not as confident in Poland as I probably should be and want to be, just because, again, the Denmark game was a little bit. I want to see a little bit of a different mentality from this team. I want to see them go at teams as if they're a powerhouse and they really have made that next step amongst those top nations. And I think right now we're still looking to see that from them, but I'm hoping it'll be over this next international break we really do get to see that come about.
definitely.
Definitely. I'm going to jump back in here, Matt. I want to take the focus back over to Inter. Obviously, they were one of the five perfect teams going into the week last week. I had mentioned it in our prologue at the beginning of the show. Inter stumbled on the week, but then got back to winning with a really late win against Genoa, 1-0. First, I kind of have two questions on Inter. One, in your opinion, what was the better acquisition or what was the better move in the transfer window this summer? Spalletti coming in or them managing to keep Ivan Perisic on the team? And will they stay in the Scudetto race, seeing that they have no European responsibilities this year?
Okay, so the first question is very, very good. I think, you know, let's start with Spalletti. So, because Spalletti, obviously, he's the manager, and that's really the guiding presence, and of course, he's coming from Roma. So, I would say that Spalletti was the bigger addition. I think just for the simple fact that Inter have really had a revolving door on the bench for the past couple of years. Obviously, we saw what happened last year. Yeah. De Boer was Mancini was fired, I think, 3 or 4 weeks before the season started. De Boer was given a couple of weeks to really get, you know, situated in Italy where he's never coached, and he has a bunch of players that really weren't his, and he was fired after 80 something days. They brought in Pioli, who started off okay, then he was fired, and all those different things. I think it's very important when you get a guy like Spalletti who has that experience coaching in Italy. For me, I thought that was the biggest move they made last summer. Again, that presence in the locker room, to bring that stability, to bring that fire to the team. Because let's face it, Inter is they're an elite club. When they have the players there, when they're going right, they're an elite club. And I think when you get that manager who can really bring the best out of some of those players, like, for example, what we're seeing here early with Milan Skriniar, the guy they got from Sampdoria, he's off to a fantastic start. And I think when you need a veteran coach and you need a little bit of that motivation coming out from that coach to get those guys who are, you know, coming into a situation where there's a lot of pressure. He came over for 22 million euros from Sampdoria, and there's a lot of people looking at him to step up and be that vice Gian Miranda in the back, because they did sell Jesse Amarillo to La Liga. I think it was maybe Sevilla, Valencia. I'm not entirely sure on the team.
Valencia.
Valencia. So, for me, I think Spalletti was the biggest addition they made. But having said that, I think the second biggest move they made, or move they didn't make, if you want to call it that, was Perisic. Yeah. I think Perisic brings so much to this team, and I think that's very clear for the simple fact that United were willing to spend almost 55 to 60 million euro for him to bring him over to England. Jose Mourinho loves his work rate. He loves that he plays a strong defensive game. He can move forward. He's good with both of his feet. He's very good on the ball. And I think having him out wide when you do have a little bit of a question mark on the other flank with Candreva, I think that was the second best move they made. And sometimes the best moves are the ones you don't make. And with Perisic, that is certainly the case. And I think we're seeing it early here that he's bringing so much to the attack. And he's so important to how much Icardi produces, because his crosses are fantastic. He's very good at linking play. And he always looks his way to give the star striker the goal opportunity. So for me, those two are the top additions and retentions that they could have made.
Absolutely. And the part about the Scudetto, because obviously they were perfect going into this weekend and then obviously fell off. I want to say it was against Bologna, but I can't remember. It was a midweek match.
Bologna.
It was Bologna.
It was at Bologna too.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, is this team good enough to stay in that race with Napoli and Juventus?
Time will tell. I think there are a couple question marks with this team. Obviously, they have a fantastic goalkeeper and one of Europe's most underrated goalkeepers in Semih Hrdanović. Mm-hmm. Time and time again, this guy saves them from he saves them from losing games. He saves them from blowing victories, and I think that he should be getting his praise more than he has over the past couple of years. But to speak on then whether or not they're a Scudetto qualifier, I think certainly having those Europa League qualifiers off the schedule, unlike last year, mm-hmm. it certainly does help in favor of them, because they can pretty much have their sole intentions and all their focus every week on their opponent in the domestic league, versus having to mix in those games against and those traveling schedules, across Europe and things like that, which can obviously take its toll on a team over the course of a year. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not quick to really throw them into that discussion. I really have to see how they respond and how they handle, Juventus, Milan, Roma, and all these different teams, throughout the entire year. Because I think, we saw that last year with Inter. Inter had a couple very good weeks to start the season. They actually beat Juventus in the Derby d'Italia very early on under De Boer, and then all of a sudden everything just exploded and erupted and he was fired. So I think I really need to see a little bit more from this team. But so far, so good. What we saw over the weekend from them against Genoa is that's also a good indicator, because when you don't play your best football, but you still find a way to get wins, those are the teams that wound up competing for the top four and the titles. We saw that time and time again with Juve, where sometimes maybe they don't play their best game, they look very sloppy, but they somehow maybe win 1-0 or 2-1 over a team on the road, and those extra points wound up helping them in the end win the title. So I need to wait a little bit more on Inter, but again, if you're an Inter fan, you should be very confident that you could at least finish top four. But Scudetto, I need to hold off, and I need to see a little bit more from them to really give them that credit.
Sure, and getting to your point of the sloppy games that Juventus can play, those ugly 1-0, 2-1 victories, I get the feeling we're going to see one this weekend when they go to Atalanta, who's certainly a feisty side to play. I want to go to Paulo Dybala quick. I would be remiss not to ask a Juventus question, being a Juventino. Dybala is the fastest person in Serie A history to 10 goals, which he's done in 6 matches. Can he keep up this kind of pace and beat Higuain's record or shared record with Gino Rossetti of 36 goals in a season in the Serie A?
I absolutely think he can. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to come at the expense of maybe Higuain getting less goals and maybe getting less playing time.
Yeah.
And I think it hurts for Juventini to hear that, I think we're kind of clearly seeing that they brought in Higuain last summer as to be the main striker, the main guy up front, right? Mm-hmm. Spend 90 million euro, you take him from a rival, that's what you expect him to be. But now we're starting to see that, Allegri does prefer Mandzukic's work rate, everything he brings to the attack, everything he brings offensively, the energy on the pitch, everything like that, even over a guy like Higuain. Whether that's just a rotational decision for him to make, that remains to be seen. But I think for me, it's Dybala's team now.
Yeah.
It's Dybala's team. They've given him the number 10. That's one of the biggest indicators that, you're taking on that additional responsibility and you're supposed to be the guy for this team. I mean, 10 goals in 6 games. He's on a torrid pace. And I think, to say that he can't get 25 to 30 goals would be foolish at this point, just because he's playing at such a high level and he looks as confident as he could possibly be right now. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I think we have to see, how the middle of the season does for him when you start, mixing in those additional Coppa Italia fixtures, those additional Champions League fixtures and things like that. Mm-hmm. If you're going to speak mostly on his goals and everything like that, Juventus fans are going to be ecstatic with everything he does. Mm-hmm. But I think they really do want to see how he performs in Europe. Can he help Juventus get a title? I think that's the biggest thing, because everyone knows he's talented, even outside of Italy. Everyone knows this kid's got a gift, mm-hmm. and he's got the potential to be a Ballon d'Or winner someday. But I think all the goals he does score domestically, 25 to 30, whatever we want to call it, and whatever we want to pin him for this year, I think that really the biggest thing is that they want to see, how he can do that in Europe. Can he be that number 10 and have that impact on the European level that he's having domestically? And I think that's one of the things that Juventus fans are going to be focusing on. But the guy's off to a fantastic start, and I don't see him slowing down at any point. He's playing phenomenal, and he's just an all-around fantastic player.
Absolutely. Last question before I let you go tonight. Juventus and Napoli, like we had indicated earlier, are still perfect on the season in league. This weekend, I had said earlier, Juventus travels to Atalanta, Napoli has Cagliari at home. But the following week, which should both be victories for both sides, you would think. But the following week is a much tougher road. Juve faces Lazio at home at the J Stadium, or the Allianz Arena now. And Napoli travel to Roma in the next round of fixtures in round 8. Do we see one of those teams lose their perfect season on that weekend?
That's a tough one. I think so. Mm-hmm. I think something's got to give. I think we have to have some sort of tilt or some sort of slight shift in that top three, top two, top three positioning at the top of the table. I wouldn't be shocked if, I mean, at Juve at home, obviously we know the success they have at home. So I think that fares well for them. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to have any issues with, handling Lazio. I think obviously Lazio, beat them in the Super Cup. But I think for me, I think they'll take care of business against Lazio. Maybe whether it be a narrow game, 2-1, 2-0, I think they'll come out on top. I think the Napoli-Roma game is the very interesting one. That's the one to look at because I think it's clear that Juve is still the favorite. But now you're looking at Napoli and Roma as the other two teams to try and knock Juve off the perch. So that game is a test to see who is the team to do that. Who is the team more prepared? Who has it in them to really make that next push and to really battle Juve for the Scudetto? For me, I think Napoli has a little bit more in favor to them just because of their manager and the talent up and down the squad. But we can't rule out what Eusebio Di Francesco has done with this Roma team. Most fans didn't really, or many fans were kind of mixed on him. Was he ready for this type of move after all those years with Sassuolo? And certainly he's shown that he is. But that's, again, that's that big match you want to circle, because I think that's going to be a clear test and clear indication of who is that second team to challenge Juve. And I think that'll be the game that we see, that shift I was mentioning earlier. For me, I'm gonna say that Napoli's going to win that game. If all things go well for them, I think they're going to have a little bit of extra motivation in them to really make that next step. But it's going to be tight regardless. And I'm just, as a neutral, not looking at that game, as a Milan fan, I hope there's draws in both games. But I just want to see good football. I just want to see Serie A get that credit it deserves. And these are the two games you definitely want to look at over the next couple of weeks to really see what the quality that Serie A has.
And Matt, those two games might not even be the biggest games in the Serie A on the weekend, because it's the same weekend as the derby.
Yeah, it's that weekend, man. Honestly, if cancel your appointments, cancel your plans, just sit down and just watch these games, because again, this is Serie A. This is what Serie A has to offer in that weekend. Well, you're going to get the games. You're going to get the players. You're going to get everything in that weekend. So this is me promoting Serie A. Give it a shot. Watch that weekend. You won't be disappointed, and you'll see everything on display.
And the Serie A, good for them too, because they were smart about this. The Juve game is at noon on Saturday. The Roma-Napoli game is at 2:45 on Saturday, and the derby is at 1 o'clock. I'm sorry, at 2:45 on Sunday. So they've made the
they staggered room. It.
Yeah, exactly. They smartened up, and they've staggered it so that you can see all of those games individually. Right. I think it's going to be a great weekend.
Oh, absolutely, and I think that's. I mean, there would have been virtual pitchforks on Twitter of people saying, "Why'd you put the games on at the same time?" That I shout out to Serie A's scheduling committee for making sure that everyone who's a Serie A fan or even just a neutral can really get the full effect and the full taste of what Serie A has to offer in that weekend by being able to watch all three games without having to flip back and forth.
Yeah, they got that one right, man. So, hey, I wanna thank you again for coming on and giving us so much time. Seriously, I didn't realize we went that long. We appreciate all the Serie A knowledge, and we look forward to really having you back soon.
Thanks a lot for having me on, guys. I really do appreciate it, and look forward to being on again soon.
Grazie. Oh, thanks, man.
All right, have a good night.
You too, bye.
And that was Matt Santangelo. Fantastic discussion. Rob, I guess, just looking ahead at the schedule, actually that is 2-3 weeks from now because of the international break between round 7 and round 8 in the Serie A, but we might have 3 Serie A games as our match of the week on that week, man. When you've got Juve Lazio, Roma Napoli, and the Milan Derby, I mean, could they have worked that out any better?
No, they haven't.
No, and I think it's great also that they staggered the games. Just kind of as a quick glance over the over that setup. So before we jump into our league coverage, Rob, I do want to just chat for 2 seconds. Like I had said in the prelogue for the show, that we had 5 perfect teams when we looked at the when we did last week's show. We had PSG, Inter, Napoli, Juve, and Barca. Okay, and I'm talking about in league. I know that some of those teams had lost in Champions League play, but in league, those 5 teams were perfect. Now, with PSG drawing Montpellier, which we'll talk about in a moment, And with Inter losing to Bologna on the road, we have three left. So we have Juve, we have Napoli, we have Barca. So just a real quick thing left, Rob. Who do you think is going to be the last man standing? Who's the last team standing in terms of perfection?
It's tough.
Yeah, and you have the Barca schedule. You probably have the Barca schedule in front of you.
Or I don't, actually, but I can look it up.
As I say, you could probably have it up in about a second. I've got the Serie A schedule. And like I had said, Napoli's got Cagliari and Juve-Atalanta on the weekend. So those should run true to form like we talked about with Matt. I think the Juve-Lazio and the Roma-Napoli matchups are going to be difficult as well for Juve and Napoli that we talked about in 3 weeks. And then after that, Juve has Udinese, which should be a rollover. But Napoli at home to Inter is going to be really difficult in round nine. That's on the 22nd and 21st of October. Ahead of that, you have Juve-Spal, which should be a layup. And just looking quickly for Napoli here on the list, they have Genoa, which they should win that match as well. So, I don't see too much challenging them other than that weekend, that particular weekend coming up until they face each other at the beginning of December. So, Juve and Napoli could actually go a little while. Round 11, I'm sorry, October 28th, AC Milan-Juventus, which is going to be a cracker. And just ahead of that, Juve-Benevento, which will definitely be a walk in the park. And Napoli-Chievo, which should be easy. So, yeah, I think Napoli-AC Milan round 13 could be a tripping spot. I believe it was round 15, yep, Juve-Napoli, which would be head-to-head. I don't think either of them survive to that point. So I think you got to look at the Barca schedule and tell me what you think. I think, Rob, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't El Clasico about the same time, that first week in December?
No, it's at the end, the 23rd.
Okay, so they don't face Madrid till then, but not that Madrid is the only team that could challenge them in La Liga, but do you see anything on their schedule that could?
I do.
Oh, yeah, what do you got?
On the 14th, they take on Atletico at the Wanda Metropolitano.
Ah, there you go, at the new stadium. So that's December 14th, or?
It's October 14th.
Oh, so that's, wow. That
2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now.
Okay, so that is the same weekend that Juve has Lazio and Roma-Napoli. So we could lose all three teams on that weekend.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be amazing. I know that last year, if I remember correctly, it was Man City and Bayern who ran perfect like throughout, remember? And then they both in the same week in Champions League. And then I think they both stumbled that weekend in league. But it happened at the same time where we lost the last two. So we could potentially see all three teams drop those points in round eight in Italy, but same weekend, no matter what. So we'll have to see. What time is the game? What time is that game against Atleti? What's the date and time?
Date and time. Just give me 1 second. It is on the 14th at 2:45.
Ah, same time as Roma-Napoli. So depending on when that final whistle blows, one of them might be last man standing. We'll have to kind of simultaneously watch them, Rob, right?
Right.
That's what we'll have to do. So, all right, man. So since we're talking about leagues, I'm going to throw it over to you, my friend, to talk about La Liga.
Yeah, absolutely. In La Liga, our match of the week was Atletico Madrid taking on Sevilla. We predicted a 2-1 victory for Atletico. It ended up 2-0. Goals from Yannick Carrasco in the 46th, and Antoine Griezmann gave all 3 points to Los Colchoneros as they go second in La Liga. In first, still with the perfect record, is Barcelona with 18 points. In third, Sevilla with 13. In fourth, Valencia, which is also a team that haven't lost a single game yet this season, is in fourth. Real Betis is in 12th. Real Madrid is in 11th following that loss against Real Betis a couple of days ago, Joe. So the defending European and Spanish champions have finally lost the game.
Yeah, they're stumbling. It's strange. And I've got BN Sports on in the background here, and they posted a question. I think it's a little premature, but they said, can Real Madrid afford to drop any more points? I mean, we're in what, week six there in La Liga, right, Rob? I believe six matches in, correct?
Yep, six matches in.
And we're talking about that. Now, granted, it's about 20% of the season. So one-fifth of the season. But, man, to be talking in those types of terms, even to suggest in those types of terms, you did not expect that to sit here before October 1st and go, oh, boy, Real Madrid can't afford to drop any more points. It just it sounds absurd, but it's happening.
Seven-point gap between them and Barcelona.
Huge. Absolutely huge.
Definitely. And in our relegation zone, we have Deportivo La Coruña with four, Malaga with first, and Alaves, the only teams have not won a single, actually, sorry, the only teams have not gotten a single point, is in last place with 0 points. Top goal scorer is Lionel Messi with 9. Then going to second is Simone Zaza, another Italian striker who maybe Ventura should definitely keep an eye on, has 5 goals. In third, Maxi Gomez with 4. Alderiz with 3, and Antonio Sanabria, the Paraguayan, who scored that decisive winner against Real Madrid a couple of days ago, is also with 3, tied with Sergio Leone as well. Looking at our match of the week, we have a really good one. I think it's very interesting. It's at Sunday, 12:30 p.m., and that's Valencia against Athletic Bilbao. Obviously, Valencia are in fourth, as I mentioned, one of the only two teams who have not lost a single game so far this season. Bilbao are in 11th with 8 points. You know what? I think this Valencia side looks very interesting. I think Marcelino can really help this side, you know, be one of those surprise teams. I mean, they're off to a great start, 3 wins and 3 ties only, and got them into fourth place. And I think their streak continues. I think they beat Bilbao this weekend. I'm going to say 1-0. They're just going to edge it out really, really slow.
Does Zaza score that goal?
Yes, he does. Wow. I'm going to say that he does.
You know, and I wanted to say to Matt, Valencia is Inter Junior because they picked up Murillo and Condogbia. But Simone Zaza, who I heard was not seeing eye to eye with the top brass at Valencia, the kid just keeps scoring goals. I believe he had a brace on the weekend. So he's been on fire, he's in great form, and really one of the key factors as to why Valencia's, you know, at the top of the tables here. You got to remember, the past 2 years, I think they'd finished 13th both years, Rob, if I'm remembering that correctly. I know it was bottom of the table, you know, or close to the bottom of the table. So there, it's nice to see them up and running with the big boys now, and I think they owe it to a lot of the moves that they've made, and also bringing in Marcelino, who's done well. I think I also saw on the weekend, it might have been him, that he pulled a hammy celebrating a goal on the weekend. So that was an interesting little tidbit. But let's take it over to Ligo and Rob, where our match of the week this past week was the PSG matchup against Montpellier. I had actually predicted a 3-0 PSG victory and got this one completely wrong. There are no goals to report in this game. It was a 0-0 draw. It was the first blemish PSG had on their record this season. But despite that blemish, they still are sitting in first place right now in Ligue 1. After 7 matches, they're on 19 points, but Monaco is slowly creeping back in. They're on 18 points. Bordeaux in third on 15. Saint-Étienne in fourth on 14. And then we have Marseille and Nantes tied for fifth place on 13 points. Nantes, by the way, Rob, 7 matches, 5 goals for, 5 goals against, but still 13 points from 5 goals. So go figure that one. I'm looking at it, they're 2-1 victory over Strasbourg, 1-0 over Caen, 1-0 over Montpellier, and then a 0-0 draw and a 1-0 victory over Troyes, giving them 13 points, which is amazing. Lyon in 7th on 12, tied with Caen there as well. The bottom of the table has Metz at the bottom on 3 points, Strasbourg on 4 points, Lille in the last relegation spot on 5, and just outside Dijon on the same point total, and Amiens and Rennes on 6 points each. Our top goal scorers, right now the top goal scorer in all of Europe was Radamel Falcao, 11 goals, 1 assist after 7 matches. The penalty taker, Edson Cavani, on 7 goals. Then we have Diaz and Fekir both at Lyon on 5 goals each. And Jai at Marseille on 5 goals as well. And then Balotelli and Bamba at Saint-Étienne and Neymar on 4 goals each in Ligue 1. Our match of the week is back to PSG as they host Bordeaux in this one coming up. That matchup is, just looking quickly at my notes here, Saturday at 11 a.m., we're just looking, PSG again in first place on 19 points, as mentioned before. Bordeaux in third place on 15, so this is really a nice matchup at the top of the table. But at the Parc des Princes and coming off the draw to Montpellier, you can't see them not giving it their all here. Neymar is out with a foot injury or maybe out. He's currently nursing a foot injury. Di Maria is still nursing a thigh injury, and Javier Pastore injured as well. It's yet to be seen if they will make this match or not. But I think in this one, I can't see PSG dropping two in a row, especially going home to play. I'm going to take them in a 2-1 victory over Bordeaux to maintain that top spot in Ligue 1, Rob. So I'm going to send it over to you, my friend, for the EPL.
Absolutely. And in the EPL, our match of the week was Southampton against Manchester United. We predicted a 2-0 victory for Manchester United in this one, and it ended up being only 1-0. For Manchester United, and that lone goal was scored by Romelu Lukaku in the, I want to say it was the 20th minute. It was the 20th minute to give Manchester United all the 3 points as it stands. However, they are still tied with points on Manchester City with only a plus 4 goal differential for Manchester City, but have the same record of 5 wins and just 1 draw and no losses. But only four goals separate both these teams with the with big matches coming soon. In third is Chelsea with 13th, also coming off of another win. And I have to say, Joe, that Morata kid's a bit good, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not bad. I guess he knows how to score a goal or two, right? no one knew that. He was a mystery, wasn't he?
I don't understand to this day why, but as I mentioned, Alvaro Morata scored a hat-trick in the 4-0 victory against Stoke City, and he's off to a really good start, I would say.
Yeah, he's definitely off to a great start. You know, I know people were worried about, you know, could he score in the EPL? You know, he scored in La Liga, he scored in the Serie A. Antonio Conte had him at Juventus and knew what he was getting, made sure he was one of the top, you know, targets for the transfer window for Chelsea. And you can see why. Kid's a stud. Kid's a stud.
It's a really good player. In fourth is Spurs with 11, tied with Liverpool, who are also with 11. That got that dramatic win against Leicester over the weekend. Arsenal, with their win, go to 7th with 10 points. In the relegation zone, we have West Ham with 4 points, Bournemouth with 3, and Crystal Palace, the only team to have not gotten a single point yet this season, with 0 points and all 6 games have ended in losses. Top goal scorers is Alvaro Morata with 6, tied with Romelu Lukaku and Sergio Aguero, followed by Jamie Vardy in 4th with 5, tied with Raheem Sterling as well. And our match of the week next week for the Premier League is going to be a big one, a really good one. Saturday at 12:30 p.m. It's Chelsea against Manchester City. Boy, this is really going to be the good afternoon game to watch. I mean, I think I'm convinced that this is probably going to end in a stalemate. I'm going to say, because we're going to see a lot of attacking soccer in this one, I'm going to say 2-2 for this one.
Yeah, I think so too. This is going to be a tough one. And I was going to say as well, Rob, looking ahead at the matches of the week that we have in the leagues. So we're not talking Champions League, because there's some enormous matchups in the Champions League this week. But as far as league matches go, I think this is the major match of the week. If we wanted to classify one, maybe we should start doing that, classifying one match in the leagues each week and saying that is the big one. That is the biggest matchup we're talking about this week. And I think this Chelsea-Man City matchup definitely fits that bill. Yeah, so it's going to be a great one to watch. I guess if it wasn't Chelsea-Man City this week, then my Serie A matchup of the week would be that second option. So let's jump into the Serie A, where last week we had the Juventus-Torino, we had the Derby della Mole, and I predicted a 2-0 victory in this one, and I forgot, I guess, to specify that the 2-0 was just the Dybala goals. Juve wins this one 4-0, Dybala in the 16th, Miralem Pjanic in the 40th minute, Alexandro in the 57th, and then Dybala adding a second goal in stoppage time in the second half. So putting that one in the bag, as we talked with Matt earlier, we still have two perfect teams at the top of the table. Napoli ahead on goal differential on 18 points. Juve on 18 points as well. Inter, the best defensive team right now in the Serie A. They've only conceded 2 goals after 6 matches. They are on 16 points, especially after getting that late winner against Genoa on the weekend. Lazio in 4th on 13 points. Roma on 12. AC Milan on 12. Then just outside the European spots, Samp and Torino both on 11 points each. Atalanta on 8. Chievo on 8 and Bologna on 8. The bottom of the table, Benevento. At least they've scored a goal this season where Crystal Palace has not. So Benevento, 6 losses after 6 matches, no points. Verona on 2 points. Genoa on 2 points. Then we are just outside the relegation zone to Udinese. Crotone, who on the weekend beat Benevento 2-0 to take themselves out of the cellar. And then we head up to Sassuolo and Spal on 4 points there as well. Match of the week, like I'd said earlier, Rob, if that Chelsea City matchup wasn't there, our major match of the week would be this AC Milan-Roma matchup at the San Siro on Sunday at 12 o'clock. We know about Andrea Conti tearing his ACL. He's out for the season. Patrick Schick is out with an injury as well for Roma, so he will not be playing. And then a couple other guys nursing injuries on both sides. Make this one a little interesting. When we look at Milan, coming off the 2-0 loss to Samp, where we talked about it a little earlier, really trying to get their bearings straight here. They look a little touch and go right now. Roma, on the other hand, though, have won 3 straight, including 3-1 over Udinese on the weekend. And they've actually scored 3, 6, 10 goals in their last 3 matches, although it's been against Verona, Benevento, and Udinese, like we had said earlier. But at the San Siro, it's going to be tough to play no matter what, no matter which team. And I think AC Milan wants to get back on their winning ways. I'm going to take AC Milan in this one in 2-1. I'm even going to go as far as to say there'll be a Patrick Crotone goal in this one. Crotone will have a goal in this one. That's going to be my prediction. But this is definitely going to be a great watch on Sunday at high noon. So, Rob, over to you, sir, for the Bundesliga.
Yes, in the Bundesliga, we got our match of the week last week was Schalke against Bayern Munich. We predicted a 2-1 victory for Bayern Munich. And it ended in a... screen literally just froze for a second. Give me 1 second. And then 3-0 for Bayern Munich. As Carlo Ancelotti's men get another win after bouncing back from that loss against Hoffenheim, I believe. Mm-hmm. Was it, Joe?
Yeah, that's right. 2 weeks earlier.
Yeah. We saw Robert Lewandowski score in the 25th minute. James Rodriguez getting his first goal for Bayern Munich in the 29th minute. And then Arturo Vidal rounding off the 3 goals for the Bavarians. So as it stands, Borussia Dortmund are still perfect as well, with 5 wins, 1 draw at 16. In second, Hoffenheim with 14. In third, Bayern Munich, as I mentioned, with 13. In fourth, Hanover with 12. In fifth, Augsburg with 11. And Leipzig in 10 with 6. Running off the relegation playoff spot, we have Freiburg with 4. Werder Bremen and Cologne in the relegation zone with 3 and a point, respectively. The top goal scorers are Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang with 8 goals, Robert Lewandowski with 7. Tino Werner with 5, Kevin Volland and Maximilian Philipp with 4 goals to their names as well. And our match of the week is going to be Augsburg against Borussia Dortmund Saturday at 9:30 p.m. This Borussia Dortmund side looks scary good, Joe. I mean, they look really, really great. And I think nothing's going to stop them, even in this game against Augsburg. I'm going to say 2-0 to Dortmund.
Yeah, they really do look like they're high-flying, and it's amazing because they had such a bad match against Spurs in the Champions League in week one. Now it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to bounce back, because we're going to talk about them again in a couple minutes. But they are flying pretty high, and they are fun to watch, that's for sure. So, Rob, let's take it back over to this side of the pond and look at MLS. We are really at the nitty-gritty here for Major League Soccer. Some teams only have 3 matches left, including Toronto FC, who, just a few weeks ago we were talking about them as being on the run to the best record ever. I have to go look and see the numbers, but I think they are out of that running at this point. Having dropped their last 2 results, losing 2-1 to the Revolution on the weekend and midweek, which are our match of the week, losing 5-3 to Montreal. We had predicted a 2-0 victory for Toronto in this one. But goals here by Ignacio Piatti, 2 goals by Piatti, a goal by Donadell, and 2 goals by Jackson Hamill in this one, offsetting an own goal by Boldor and 2 goals by Toussaint Ricketts. Really kind of an out-of-left-field type of result there for Toronto FC, especially at home to lose 5-3 like that. So looking at the standings, Toronto FC and NYCFC have both qualified for the playoffs. Toronto on 62 points, NYCFC on 52 points. Atlanta United in third after another big victory, Rob, last night, which was on major television, 2-0 over the Montreal Impact, although losing Miguel Almiron now for a month with a hamstring pull. They're on 49 points, Chicago Fire on 48 points, Columbus Crew on 47, and the New York Red Bull, having gone winless in their last five, on 42 points. Then just behind them, the Montreal Impact on 39 points, New England Revolution on 38, Philadelphia Union on 36, Orlando City 35, DC United last place in the Eastern Conference on 31 points. Western Conference looks like this, Vancouver Whitecaps on 48. Then we have the Timbers and Sporting KC on 47 points each. Fourth place is the Seattle Sounders on 44 points, Real Salt Lake on 41 points, the Earthquakes and San Jose on 39 points. In the playoff spot right now, Houston Dynamo, same point total, but by gold, I'm sorry, I believe it's head-to-head on these guys, are sitting outside that playoff spot, but Houston does have a game at hand on the Earthquakes. FC Dallas on 38 points, a huge fall from grace for them towards the end of the season here. Minnesota on 32, the LA Galaxy on 27, and Colorado Rapids last place overall in the league on 26 points. Our top goal scorers right now, Diego Valeri, 20 goals. David Villa on 19. Nemanja Nikolic on 18 goals. And then we have Joseph Martinez at Atlanta on 17 and Ignacio Piatti on 17. Giovinco all the way down to 8th place, 15 goals. So not the biggest season for him, but I don't think he cares as long as they win that title. Match of the week is a great one, Rob. Seattle-Vancouver. This matchup is on Wednesday, so this is a midweek tie. 10:30 p.m. If we look back on the standings real quick, Vancouver leading the way on 48 points and Seattle just behind them on 44 points. Seattle's lost, winless are their last five, where Vancouver has won four of their last five. This match is in Seattle, and you know, as a Cascadia rivalry, this one's always a huge one. I'm going to take a draw in this one, Rob. I'm going to take actually a 2-2 draw in this one. I think Vancouver right now is playing so well. They're unbeaten in their last five matchups. The only blemish comes at home to the Columbus Crew 2-2, but on the weekend they beat the Rapids 2-1. They've also beat Minnesota United, Real Salt Lake, who's a playoff team, in Orlando City on the road, and that's a huge travel for them to go all the way from Vancouver to Orlando. So I think they're playing well, and I think they're going to take this one to the Sounders 2-2 overall. So, Rob, before we get off the MLS, I just want to talk about something that I talked about in the opening monologue there for the show. And that was about, and I'd said that at MLS, a player was held out of his European audition. And I wanted to just talk about this quickly because reports were that Bill Hamid was supposed to start this weekend for DC United. And was held out of the game, where scouts from Europe in the stands. This is part of the information. This comes from a story from Adam Whitaker Snavely at SB Nation, where according to Ivis Galarsep, one of the scouts for Borussia Mönchengladbach was in the stands. Not for Mönchengladbach, for Eintracht Frankfurt. A scout for Eintracht was in the stands for this one to watch Bill Hamid, and all of a sudden Bill Hamid was pulled out of the lineup. And if there's any truth to this, Rob, I've got issue with it.
I do.
You know, give me your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, is there a reason why he was held off?
There's no injury.
Something must be up there.
Well, I think they didn't want to lose him. Right now, for DC United, the only saving grace to DC United's season right now is the fact that they have Bill Hamid on the team, because they've really got, and I'm just going to go to the roster right now and take a look. No one really excites you. Steve Birnbaum, I mean, okay, he's had a couple looks with the national team, but he's certainly not one of choice. They really don't. They have Lloyd Sam on this team. They've really got not much. Patrick Mullins is leading the way with four goals as their striker. I mean, there's nothing to you know, write home about. Actually, Luciano Acosta, the midfielder, is leading all scorers with 5 goals. There's nothing to write home about for DC United right now. So here's Bill Hamid, who is their only saving grace. This is the guy, you know, we talk about who's the next goalkeeper for the U.S. men's national team. This is the guy many people point to, including myself, and saying he's the one. And DC United, I think, knows that. They know that he is the best option there. And what do? They hold him out. They hold him out of the game. They don't want anybody scouting him, looking at him, because the fear is that he'll move on to Europe, you know, in the next transfer window.
I mean, they shouldn't stop it in the first place. I mean, if a team is interested and they have the money to get him, they have all the right to get him.
Absolutely. I agree. So I don't know. I haven't seen anything about an injury or anything like that, but it's just sad if they're actually pulling players or holding them out so that they don't get to be scouted by a team in Europe. I think it's ridiculous. So let's move forward. Let's talk about Champions League this week. Obviously, match day 2. There are some enormous, enormous matches coming up this week, Rob. Just looking at the Tuesday matchups, and I'm going to scan through just quickly because one of them is our match of the week. But Manchester City, Shakhtar Donetsk is up. Monaco, Porto, Napoli coming off the loss have to face Feyenoord at home. Sevilla, Maribor, Spartak, Liverpool, I think is going to be a tricky little fixture. But our match of the week in the Champions League this week on Tuesday is the big Borussia Dortmund-Real Madrid matchup, especially looking at the run of form for Real Madrid and Borussia Dortmund. Things aren't going well at Dortmund. I'm sorry, Real Madrid. Dortmund, on the other hand, 6-1 over Gladbach, 3-0 over Hamburg, 5-0 over Cologne. These guys are scoring goal after goal after goal. And I think it poses as a big danger for Real Madrid, who manages a 2-1 over Alaves, losing to Betis 1-0 at home. And even drawing Levante a few weeks ago 1-1. This is a tough spot. What are your thoughts on this one, Rob?
Very tough. Very tough, to be honest. You go first.
Okay. Just looking at the injury list, as we've talked about before, Dortmund, amazing that they're scoring all these goals because all these players that are injured would start on most teams in the world. Eric Durham, Marco Reus, Marcel Schmelzer, Rafa Guerrero, Sebastian Rota, Schürrle is doubtful. These are all players missing, but rightfully so. On the Real Madrid side, we've got a bunch of injuries there, too. We've got Toni Kroos, who's out, Marcelo's out, Karim Benzema, Mateo Kovacic, Teo Hernandez. These are all players that are going to be out and missing because of injury. This one's a tough one to call, Rob, because there's so many variables here. But, I'm going to get crazy with this one, and I'm going to take Dortmund 2-1 playing in front of the yellow wall. I think there's a good chance they could win this one, so... That would be my guess. How about you?
I'm gonna say 2-2.
2-2. Let me just get that documented in here because that's it's an interesting it's gonna be an interesting matchup. I think it's like you said, it's tough to predict. Both teams are so good that you don't know, but that's gonna be serious must-see TV on Tuesday, that's for sure. Let's jump into the big matchup on Wednesday. And again, I'm going to go back and look at the fixtures quickly over, across the Champions League, because Wednesday's an even bigger day than Tuesday. The early start, Karabag, Roma has to travel to Karabag to face them. Atleti-Chelsea is a huge one on the weekend. Juve going to have to bounce back from the 3-0 loss to Barcelona, facing Olympiacos. Manchester United getting a little bit of more of a challenge, having to go to Moscow to face CSKA. But the big one is going to be the PSG-Bayern Munich matchup, and this one is at the Parc des Princes on Wednesday. Looking at the injury list, like we talked about before, Thiago Alcantara is going to be out of this one. Manuel Neuer, we found out, is out for 4 months with another foot injury. But Angel Di Maria is a possible for this game. Neymar is a possible. Javier Pastore is a possible for this game. I haven't heard that they've been completely ruled out as of yet. This one is another tough one to call for me, Rob. I'm gonna stick with the home side in this one. I'm going to take PSG in this one 2-1 as well, especially if Neymar does make it into this matchup. But again, a tough one to envision here. How about you, sir?
I'm going to say 1-0 PSG.
1-0 PSG. So we're both taking Bayern to lose this one. And if that does happen, I just want to go back and look at the standings quickly. Because this is a battle of the top two teams. One of them will fall solidly into second place. But we'll have to see how the results go. So let's move on to the Europa League matchup that we have slated for Thursday. I'm just trying to find my mouse here. Sorry. And on Thursday, we have a pretty good one with Lyon Atalanta. I think everyone was surprised with Atalanta's 3-0 victory over Everton in day one of the Europa League playoffs here, or the group stages. You know, looking at this particular matchup, Atalanta comes in pretty healthy, had themselves a good game on the weekend as well. I'm just kind of going back and looking at it with a really, really, really late goal to draw level against Fiorentina. Looking at Lyon in this one, just looking quickly, the injuries, you know, they're not going to be missing too much as well. So this is a tough one to call. The match is Thursday, 3 o'clock in Lyon, Rob. Give me your thoughts and your winner on this one.
Yeah, it's another really good game. I'm going to say a draw in this one as well. I'm going to say 1-1.
1-1. I think, you know,
I'm going to say 1-1.
I think I like your thinking on that one. Atalanta, amazingly, with all the players they've lost in this summer transfer window, still managed to be pretty competitive, and they're there right now. So I think I think I agree with you. I think 1-1 is definitely a good result for this particular matchup. So. All right, so with all of that work said and done, Rob, I've got the trivia answers.
All right.
So let's go to the first question that I gave you, and it was a statement. Although I am not a striker, I have scored goals for Lille, Newcastle, PSG, and Crystal Palace. I've even scored for my national team. Who am I?
Johan Cabaye.
That is correct, Johan Cabaye. Only one goal at PSG, by the way. So, and the second trivia question was, Paulo Dybala currently leading the top five leagues in Europe with a 47-minute-to-goal ratio. Can you name the other four in the top five?
I could.
All right.
Falcao
is number two at 52 minutes per goal.
Messi
is number three, 60 minutes per goal.
Aubameyang?
Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, number four, 67 minutes per goal. And number five?
Lewandowski?
No.
Morata?
No. I'm impressed you got to that far, by the way. So,
what league?
Somebody that we've talked about tonight. Somebody that you specifically asked a question about with our guest.
Oh, Chiro Immobile.
Chiro Immobile, 68 minutes per goal. So, top 5 minutes per goal in the top five leagues. Chiro Immobile at 5 on 68 minutes per goal. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, 67 minutes per goal. Messi, 60 minutes per goal. Falcao, 52 minutes per goal. And Dybala is scoring almost a goal a half, Rob, 47 minutes per goal. Just an amazing, amazing run for that young man. So,
notice how none of them are Premier League.
Yeah, it's true. And we've had some scorers in the Premier League this year, too. Think about it.
Yeah.
Morata, Lukaku, all doing very, very well. Speaking of scorers, what do you think about Diego Costa finally going to Atleti at the January window?
He got his wish. Everyone's happy now, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, and everyone's kind of, you know, kumbayaing at this point now, too. It's kind of funny, isn't it?
But, definitely.
But he got his wish, like you said. So we'll have to see if it works out for him in the end. So without any further ado, Rob, I think we'd like to hit the closing music.
All right.
Let's do it. And we'll turn that down a little bit so I can talk over it. So for episode 177 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Matt Santangelo from Italian Football Daily for joining us tonight. Next week, we will bring you Europa League coverage, Champions League coverage. We'll look back on the league, and we'll start to get ready for the last World Cup qualifying weekend before the 2018 World Cup. So for episode 177 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
Everybody, aloha.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.